Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage moving annually.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news with Willem van Denderen shortly, and we'll be joined during the show by our 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League and former Notts County man Dean Hennessy, while our former ITN journo turned pundit Derek Dyson, he's in the sick bay this week, so shout out to you, Derek, as you recover from your illness, hopefully only a week. Now, after the explosion in football in Europe last week, this week we'll examine the fallout in the second hour of the show. But with the A-League hotting up in the run home to the finals and the World Cup qualifiers as well, we're going to concentrate on some local stories in the first hour of the show. First up, Adam Lafondra from Sydney FC. He's in quarantine, but he's back. When the Stockport native signed up with the Indian Super League, it was seen by many as the harbinger of doom for the domestic league, with its reduced rights deal meaning less money for players, a historic double with his Mumbai City teammates later, and Lafondra is back with the Sky Blues soon to make a run at more silverware in Australia. And another fascinating story at Brisbane. 12 months ago, local boy Jesse Daly was plying his trade with Tacoma Defiance in the US second division when the pandemic hit. He's now a member of Warren Moon's Lions outfit, steadily climbing up the ladder with games in hand. That will be an interesting chat with the young man, plus plenty more in the A-League to wrap up the hour. In the second hour, Willem will kick off with second edition news and the latest on Socceroos and Matilda Central. Then we'll return to the wash-up from last week's Super League fiasco with the Athletic's Raphael Honigstein, one of the best in the business, who will also talk to about the critical part the German giants Bayern played in holding back the tide. Also, Bayern stories coming out, changing coaches there as well. We'll ask Raphael all about that too. City have got the treble back in play with the League Cup trophy in the cabinet and excellent results against PSG. All that and more with Dino as we talk more in Europe. And then we'll wrap it up with stoppage time. And one of our favourite topics with Dino back in the studio, promotion and relegation from the Championship. Who'll go up? Who'll survive? We'll break it all down. Michael, it's a little bit more of a subdued week in football this week after the craziness of last week.
Yeah, the volcanic eruption has slowly started to subside, although there's quite a bit of fallout to talk about as the entrails of Super League we go through. But I've been loving watching the A-League, these midweek games. It's just fantastic. Get some dinner, watch a bit of football. Did you enjoy Wednesday night's game, Rob? Central Coast Mariners in Brisbane. Did you take a look at that one?
You do like to have a go at me because, you know, I don't know where that nastiness of comes out in, Michael, because Central Coast, they're a little club, they're a minnow, and they're doing very, very well. And I do like them for obvious reasons. I have very fond memories of holidays of my youth, and I do think that they should be in the club. I love the fact that they're in the league, and I do hope that they can fight back. No, it wasn't pleasant watching, but for our guest show this evening, Jesse Daly, I'm sure he had a ball as they kicked some butt.
He certainly did, and we can get a group counselling rate for you and Ray Gatt if you want to, Rob.
That's Ray Gatt has been so good to the show, getting us up and running, and you're just throwing haymakers at him. That's not nice.
It's not haymakers, it's a very genuine...
Michael Edgley style, it's called passive-aggressive haymaker.
Hello, Willem. Graham Arnold is set to select an entirely overseas-based squad for next month's training camp to be held in preparation for July's Olympics. The decision means A-League players will remain with their clubs for the final series. The window runs from May 31 until June 15, meaning Arnold himself won't be there. He'll be in Kuwait with the senior squad. But Michael, this seems like an intelligent decision. It retains the quality of the A-League product as much as they can throughout the finals. And Arnie and his squad have said they've watched every other game this year, so they've seen enough of those guys. A few of the overseas boys can come in and get their chance to impress.
Obviously, the A-League would be absolutely decimated if they were missing the Socceroos players out of the A-League as well as the Olleroos, and we know that most of the Olleroos are in the A-League. So, yeah, it makes sense. Obviously, a delicate situation to negotiate with the APL, and this obviously COVID period has been... You know, so much dislocation and odd dates of seasons. So we just hope the domestic and international calendars moving forward can be aligned better so these sort of situations are avoided as much as possible.
Police have laid charges following a brawl at last weekend's NPL clash between Rochdale Illenden and Sydney United. Riot police were called to the ground after an on-field fight escalated into the stands, with those involved reportedly armed with items including metal pickets and milk crates. In the aftermath, Football Australia CEO James Johnson joined 2GB's Ray Hadley for an uncomfortable exchange over the removal of the national club identity policy.
There are issues in other sports as well, like NRL. There were issues in 2021 between Parramatta and West Tigers where people who behaved incorrectly were banned for years.
And well, I'm of course 2GB, a part of the Nine network of which we broadcast on. And you just know where Ray Hadley's going to go with these sort of things. It's a situation that's occurred in domestic football on many, many occasions. And I listened to that, and I just thought that James had so much more to say and could have said in defence of the rich cultural heritage of football in this country. You know, there was an issue; it needed to be dealt with. They're troublemakers. They're not welcome at any sport in this country. But I just really think that James could have done a lot better in that discussion and owned the discussion a little more. What do you reckon, Edge?
Absolutely, Rob. I think reprehensible behaviour, a throwback to the bad old times, it had nothing to do with the ethnicity or the cultural roots of those two clubs. It had everything to do with hooligans being idiots, and the police and the authorities will go through all of the footage and hopefully all of them will be rounded up and hopefully banned and expelled from their clubs and not allowed to go to the football. Simple as that.
To A-League News, Western Sydney have signed 37-year-old Scott McDonald on a deal until the end of the season as they desperately try to reverse their ailing form. It will be McDonald's third A-League club since the start of last season, having been an inaugural player at Western Sydney before joining Brisbane. Rob, this move may have seemed prescient a couple of weeks ago because the Wanderers looked destined for the finals and they look like they might lose Mitch Duke to the World Cup qualifiers, but since then, the form, as we know, has dropped off a cliff and it looks a bit unnecessary. They're adding yet another striker.
Well, I guess you got to do what you got to do, don't you? Carl Robinson came in with big raps and lots of controversy after he left Newcastle Jets and brought players along with him. I think it's one of those situations where, seriously, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. You know, the fans and supporters will say, mate, come on, we've got to do something. Otherwise, we're going to keep sliding down the ladder and there's big expectations at the Wanderers. So, yeah, it's harder for me to criticise. I know many will, but I'm not.
Okay, he might score a goal or two, but I don't think he's the magical sort of mystical puzzle piece that they've been looking for all season. Heading abroad, the UK government is considering approving a rollover of the Premier League's broadcast rights amid fears the usual auction system would see a drop in value. The current deal, worth £4.7 billion, was secured in 2018, with a rollover being considered for the next three-year cycle to provide overall stability. Any such deal would require government approval, given it would contradict competition law. Ministers are believed to want assurance from big clubs that the money would be redistributed down throughout the period before ticking it off. A bit like here in Australia, guys, the sports broadcast media bubble seems to have burst a little bit, but Michael, this would definitely represent a massive step away from Richard Scudamore's auction process.
It would. Obviously, they've made a call on whether they think they can get an increase in rights fees or not, and they're obviously looking to go back to the well with the existing rights holders to try and eke out a similar arrangement, which is about $6.5 billion, $5.2 billion from Sky, $1.4 billion from BT, and about $90 million from Amazon, who only sort of have 20 games. The rest are being shared between BT and the lion's share going to Sky. So if they can roll that over, it sort of demonstrates that they can protect their existing revenue and sort of relook to reboot their auction process from the next period. But to me, it's smart business if they can do that deal, and they probably should. $6.5 billion. It's a lot of money to play games with if you don't think you can increase and maybe get a decrease.
And do you think we'll see some sort of guarantee to make sure it's entrenched that they go back to the auction system next time? Is that incumbent on them, or can this just sort of be the start of what could be a slippery slope for that old system?
I'm not sure about that. I think the old system stood the test of time. It's just unique times with COVID, isn't it?
Certainly is unique times, Michael. And the Italian Football Federation has passed a ruling which will see any club still pushing for a European Super League by June the 21st banned from the Serie A. This means Juventus will have until that date to formally back down from the European reform, of which chairman Andrea Agnelli was considered a key player. Milan may also have to clarify their position after Real Madrid president Florentino Perez claimed they also remain involved in the push.
Well, Florentino Perez.
He's not helping anyone. He's none the least himself at this stage.
No, he's sort of embarrassing himself. I mean, you know, power and money, things that Florentino is used to. He's a billionaire. He runs an international building conglomerate. And he set this whole thing up and he has watched it crumble before his very eyes. So he's not going to get this Super League up in its current format. The billionaires who signed up with him have all gone running for cover. There are countries around the world, governments around the world who are putting in legal steps to prevent it happening again. So, no, it's just embarrassing for him, I think.
When do you think the last time Florentino was told no was?
Last week.
And before that?
Yeah, no, he's not used to no, is he, Florentino? So it's embarrassing for him, really. He's made a whole mess of this thing. But we'll talk about it with Raphael Honigstein in the second hour of the show. All right, well done. But we're going to talk A-League in this hour. We're going to talk to Adam Lafondra next. He's back from the Indian Super League. He's won the double over there for the first time in that competition. Jesse Daly from the Brisbane Roar. We'll talk more A-League at the back end of the show. So stick around. Heaps more coming up on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal.
Yes, this is Box to Box on Nine Radio, NTS News Talk Sport broadcasting across Australia, around the world on whatever podcast catcher you are tuning in to us on. Now, when he left Australia, Adam Lafondra had done pretty much everything in the Australian game and left with the good wishes of all in Australian football. We didn't know that he'd be back, though, but he is back as a championship and a premiership-winning player from the Indian Super League, and we welcome him to Box to Box. How are you, Adam?
I'm very good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. So when you left, you did go on loan and your club gave you every encouragement. You'd done everything you'd been asked of and more when you came to Sydney FC, scoring goals, winning titles and being an all-round star for the side. Did you have any thought in the back of your mind that there might be a return to Australia or did you, when you left, think that was it?
To be fair, when I did leave, obviously it was, you know, very well documented. I never really wanted to leave Sydney. It was just, you know, the uncertainty of how the league was going to go forward, how the club was going to respond to obviously the COVID period, and obviously they couldn't really financial plan beyond that. No one knew what was going to happen with the league, etc. So for me, that was very unsettling for me and my family. I've got three young children and my wife, and you know, the club were fantastic with me and helped me really move. Really, they were the ones who sort of helped me move to Mumbai and sort of engineer that move for me to sort out the predicament that we were both in. And obviously when we spoke about, I don't know, me moving, it was sort of left open ended that, you know, if there's a mutual interest of me coming back and them wanting me back, then it'll be something we both would look at, and obviously it has to be right for both parties. And you know, that's obviously what's happened here. I love my time in Sydney and I'm hoping to, you know, come out of quarantine and pick up just where I left off.
And we'll talk to Sydney a little later as you endure the 2 weeks quarantine. But your time in India, look, we all know what's happening there. It's a tragedy unfolding before our very eyes. You did get out just in time, fortunately. But it seemed that football is growing too. You just look at the international players. There's Spanish players galore over there, players from all over the world. And the quality of football in India has improved. What were your impressions of the competition? And, you know, the obvious question is comparisons to the A-League.
Yeah, it's definitely an improving league. I think people have almost written the league off as a retirement league, and it certainly wasn't that. I wasn't planning on going there retiring. And I think the foreigners there as well were a lot younger than the foreigners that are normally there. You know, I think predominantly you see 35-plus going over to India, and I think there was a lot of, you know, around 30 years old and below in India as the foreigners. And I think the league surprised me, really. I quite enjoyed it. It was a very enjoyable league. Obviously, the quality is probably down on the A-League, but there is definitely some really good young Indian players coming through and breaking through. And I've said it before, I can really see in the next 5-10 years, you know, someone breaking out from India and being a really good player and maybe getting across into Europe, into the top leagues, because you know, they love football there. The growth of that game that I've seen in just a short time there was huge. And it can only help with teams like Man City over there. I think Borussia Dortmund are over there. I think Leipzig are over there. Rangers have got an affiliation with one team, FC Basel as well. So, you know, if they get the infrastructure right and the right academy coaching, then the world's their oyster. I think that's, you know, that's where everything comes from, is investing in the youth. And obviously, you know, you reap the rewards off the back of that, not now, but in 10 years' time, 5-10 years' time. And I think that'll be the case in India. I think, I'm not going to say they're going to win the World Cup in 5 to 10 years, but I think obviously they'll be a lot further down the line than they are right now at this moment.
This is Box to Box. We're talking to Adam Lafondra, returning to Sydney FC after a great season in the Indian Super League.
Adam, interested in your experience off the pitch in India. We understand you probably didn't see too much of the country itself. How did you go with the hub setup? Was it did it play out as expected, or did it gradually get sort of more and more restrictive as the season went on?
Actually, it became less restrictive as the season went on. You know, we were sort of led to believe that, you know, it was easing. The COVID worries were easing a little bit. For me, it was definitely a roller coaster. You know, some days I would feel fantastic and other days I'd feel a bit mentally drained from it and a bit, you know, homesick, I'd guess, you know, from my wife and children. And, you know, as a footballer, you're not really, you know, you don't really think of them sort of things when, you know, as normal life, you take it for granted that you see your wife, your children or your partners or whatever. And, you know, that's just common life. But in this situation, I don't think I was quite prepared for, you know, the mental challenges ahead of me. And I think the City Group and the team I was on, we were very fortunate that we were almost like a band of brothers that we could always, you know, rely on. And if we needed to talk, we had people on hand to talk to. And, you know, I think we were quite lucky in that aspect because, like I say, it was, you know, some days I could have a down day and think, oh, you know, I'm not really feeling it today. But to be fair, there wasn't many of them days that went about. It certainly was a new experience and something that I've grown from.
And as you were over there, I assume you kept an eye on your Sydney teammates. You would have had plenty of time to watch the matches. And you mentioned earlier you were dreaming of maybe orchestrating some sort of move back to Australia. Since that's been on the cards and ticked off, what's the process been like returning?
They wanted to bring me back straight after the season ended in India, which, you know, was near impossible. I wanted to go home. I'd been away from my family for 5 months, so I needed to go home and see my wife and kids and obviously spend a little bit of time at home with the family. And there were still discussions going on. And probably after about 5 weeks, which led us probably to about a week ago, really, we got it all sorted. And, you know, I flew out pretty much straight away and straight into quarantine, looking to contribute as soon as I come out of quarantine. And like I say, I want to, you know, hit the strap soon as I get out of here and try and, you know, win us some trophies come the end of the season. That's what I'm here to do. You know, I think Sydney sort of whet my appetite the first time around when, you know, I won the grand final in my first year. And, you know, I've not stopped winning trophies since. So hopefully I bring the trophies with me.
And Adam, speaking of your family, they weren't able to be with you in India, but where are they now? Obviously, you know, it's been a really disruptive period, and the little ones want to see their dad.
Yeah, for sure. I've had to leave them in England for the time being. They're finishing off their school year this year. Then once the season's over here and I finish the Asian Champions League, I've got about 8 weeks to go home. Finish off, you know, sorting my house out at home and packing up, and then, you know, move back to Australia and regain normal life, I guess, and just get the kids back into school and getting, you know, a bit of normality back about our life. And hopefully then the COVID worries have gone completely from the world.
Yeah, well, good luck with that, mate. We wish you all the very best. And speaking of the Asian Champions League, I mean, will you be cup tied? That's the question, because you know, you qualify for Mumbai, but no doubt Sydney FC will be there as well. The trajectory of the club season's going on right now.
No, because we're competing in, I think it's like this season's Asian Champs League, whereas Mumbai in next season's Champs League, because FC Gora we're currently playing in the east side of the draw now, and I think they've just been knocked out, I think. So it's more next season's is Mumbai's turn in the Champs League, and you know, hope I can get Sydney back in the Champions League for next season as well.
And now that you return to the A-League, Adam, the finals are right ahead of you guys. There's a man in the chair that you departed called Bobo. Have you been in touch with him to let him know that you're the man in charge and that the number 9 shirt is yours? How are you guys going to make it work between the two of you?
You know, I'm quite excited to play with him. You know, obviously he's got a great record at Sydney, and I'm really looking forward to working with him and, you know, working with Costa again. I think me and Costa had a great relationship prior to me leaving. And obviously him and Bobo and Costa are playing really well at the moment as well. So, you know, I don't think the headache's for me. I think it's more for the coach to decide how we line up. Obviously, I've got to get myself match fit. Obviously, I'll be training ready as soon as I come out of quarantine. But obviously, playing a game is totally different to training. So, you know, however the coach uses me, I'm just happy for that. I just want to contribute to the boys and help us win trophies.
And just watching the A-League season as you've done so far, it's not exactly the picture you would have expected with, up until the last 48 hours, Central Coast, you know, setting up the top end, victory, it's just all imploded there. Grant Brebner's been sacked and Tony Popovich is coming back. There's new clubs in the competition now, MacArthur, FC. But Sydney, obviously, they were sort of teetering on that top six. Must have been nice to just watch Stevie Corica get them back into the winning form and up to the top end of the ladder, ready for you to run out onto the pitch in the sky blue jersey.
Obviously, I've watched the majority of the games for the boys, and you know what's been evident is how dominant they've been in the games. And you know, I'm really looking forward to doing that again and dominating teams and obviously putting away chances, because you know that's what I'm here to do. That's what, you know, I'm sort of born and bred on, is scoring goals. So, you know, like I said, I can't wait just to get out on the pitch and contribute. And like you said, the season boils down to the finals, really. And hopefully I'm hitting top form then. And it seems as if we're coming into good form as well at this moment in time. So, you know, hopefully they go hand in hand and we end up with some silverware at the end of it.
Yeah, well, Adam, when this season started, it was all doom and gloom around football in Australia. The football rights deal had been cut in half. COVID was here. Players were leaving. But you returned to a competition which has been surprisingly one of the best in recent years, with a positive future around rights deals and new clubs and exciting stories all about it. So we're sure that you'll add that silver lining to Sydney FC, mate, when you return and really head into the pointy end of the season with some momentum, and we're looking forward to seeing you running it back out on the park again, mate.
Cheers, thanks very much, can't wait.
No worries, Adam Lafondra. He's back in Australia, and that's a good thing for Sydney FC and football in general. All right, stick around after the break. We're going to continue the A-League theme. We're talking to Jesse Daly. Had three seasons over at Tacoma, the Tacoma Defiance, and he was caught up in a whole world of COVID pain himself, but he's back and the Roar are doing some fantastic things under Warren Moon. We'll talk to Jesse Daly next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King,
the kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal.
Yes, this is Box to Box. We're focusing on the domestic league in this opening hour of the show this week. We talked to Adam Lafondra before the break. He's come back from India, a man who came back from the United States playing for the Tacoma Defiance. Jesse Daly, local boy from Brisbane. He's now doing some great things with Warren Moon's Brisbane Lions outfit. How are you, Jesse?
Good, thank you, and thanks for having me.
No, not at all. Well, the club is heading in the right direction, according to the ladder. But just going back to 12 months ago, when you were you played 50 games for Tacoma in the US Second Division, Professional Football League, and you did well. We were watching your highlights reel on Facebook, and mate, you've got a nice little package there, and obviously that was used to encourage the fans at Brisbane for your return. But just tell us about what it was like there, because you got the call from Brisbane. Warren Moon well, and it was COVID central at the time. The States was the worst place in the world.
Yeah, it was a really tough place to be at the time, but I was there for 2.5-3 years, and the first 2 years I loved every minute. And the last year, yeah, it was quite tough. As you mentioned, yeah, COVID had quite an impact. So yeah, it was a tough place to be for the last kind of 9 months that I was there. But yeah, it was an awesome experience for me, and I think it holds me in good stead now for where I'm at in my career.
It sure does. And just watching that polish that that you're displaying in recent times, you know, the feeder club to come at defiance to the Seattle Sounders. It's a nice part of the world to live in. You had 2 years there as a young man, as a professional sportsman. You did say you had a great time. Did you really embrace the local lifestyle? And what's your impressions of America's support of football? Obviously it's a minnow compared to their native game. But tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, first of all, Seattle, Tacoma is an amazing place in the world. Really beautiful. And I think as a country in general, as a sporting country in general, it's pretty cool, the infrastructure, facilities. And I think they're a bit ahead of us in that regard. And there's obviously some massive sports over there, American football, basketball. And even at the college level, there's so much money in the sports, and it does get filtered down. So it was an incredible experience as a young man to be there at that time. And obviously, they got the World Cup bid while I was over there as well, so they're building towards mm-hmm. that now in 2026, I think that is. So they're definitely heading in the right direction.
Jesse, I'm just interested on how you got to the US in the first place. You played your junior football. You were the young Royal captain. You'd been at South Melbourne, Brisbane Lions as well. So to then head over to the MLS is not a traditional pathway for a young Australian football. So just wondering what led to that move.
There's an Aussie coach over there at the time who was actually the head coach of the second team, John Hutchinson. He had a good career here in Australia with the Mariners. And he was over there and he was kind of just on the lookout for some Aussie talent, maybe some that have missed out on the A-League and not quite broken through yet. And I was 19, 20 at the time. And he just invited me over for a two-week trial originally. And I went over. The trial was successful. And then we kind of, just went from there. But no, I'm very grateful to John Hutchinson. He kind of, gave me my first start in the professional game, and I don't think I'd be where I am today without him taking that chance on me.
This is Box to Box. We're talking to Jesse Daly back from the States, playing for the Brisbane Roar, doing great things under Warren Moon.
And from John Hutchinson to another manager who looks to have had a huge impact on your career, Warren Moon. Now he's in his first full season as an A-League coach, and he's one of the more undemonstrative, sort of under-the-radar coaches going about the league. So he worked with you at Lions FC in the NPL, and now with the Roar, going back to the young Roar days as well. So what's your relationship been like with him over the years, and what's he done for your career?
Yeah, it's been really good. I have a good relationship with the gaffer. I actually first had him as a coach when I was 14, 15 in my school team. And that's kind of where my relationship started with him. I was only with him at Lions for not long at all, probably 4 to 6 weeks. So I had the most to do with him. Yeah, with school football growing up and then obviously he brought me back to Australia when he got the job at Brisbane, and we're obviously doing all right at the moment, but we've got a pretty hectic schedule and a lot of games coming up, so we just need to keep our heads down, keep doing what we're doing, and hopefully we end up in a decent place by the end of the year.
Yeah, so it has been a bit of an up-and-down season for you guys. You started really well. You were right at the top of the table. You then sort of plumbed the depths of the table, and you got written off by quite a few. But, you are now flying. You put 4 away against the Mariners, and you're looking really defensively solid as well. You are chasing the pack points-wise, though. Does it feel within the group like things have ticked upwards?
Yeah, for sure. I think at the moment we've got a small but kind of tight-knit group. And I think that works in our favour. But we do have a lot of games coming up, so we'll have to check in a few weeks as well. How that goes. We've got a really close-knit group. I think that kind of helps us. We don't have big name marquees like some other clubs, so we have to make the most out of everyone in our squad. I think we're doing that at the moment.
Yeah, you sure are, and you alluded to those games in hand that you have. So, you know, as you look at the ladder, as a club, the Roar, the club that has the most games in hand, having only played 16. So you're sitting there on 26 points. Willem mentioned you're chasing the pack, but you know, is it difficult for the boys to not look at the points that are available on offer and where you might be on the ladder if you do win those games, and you know, really you should be second or third? I mean, you know, you can't help but look at these things, can you, mate?
I think, like, seriously, at the moment we're just taking one game at a time.
Come on, Jesse, one game at a time. We've heard that before. Surely you're thinking about it.
No, you can obviously dare to dream, but we do have some good experienced heads. We've got Jamie Young, Jack Hingett, Jay O'Shea, Tommy Aldred, who have all been around the trap. So they don't let us get too far ahead of ourselves at all. And we know, like, how quickly the league can swing and how quickly it can turn in an unfavourable direction. So yeah. I think if we keep picking up points, and I know it is cliche and I know it's probably the boring thing to say, but if we do keep concentrating on the next game and doing all right, then I think we'll end up in a decent place.
And just a final one from me, Jesse, you mentioned you've got a tight-knit squad, but I think you've got an ace up the sleeve who hasn't quite shown all that he can offer this season, and that's Masakatu Kudo. He spent a lot of time injured, and he scored against the Mariners, and I thought it was telling that you all got around him as a group. That shows that he's probably quite a valued member of the squad, even though he hasn't been performing to the sort of casual observer, what we might have expected. So what's he like around the group, and do you think he's getting back to his best ahead of the finals?
He is probably one of the nicest guys I've played with in football. And I think you could tell when he scored his goal, everyone was so happy for him because he's just a gem of a bloke. And we love having him at the club. As I said, he's an awesome guy. And obviously he shows his qualities in training, and you guys got to see it the other night when he scored. But yeah, I think onwards and upwards for Mass.
And another player who was on the score sheet against the Mariners, Alex Parsons. He's sort of come out of nowhere to the casual observer, but I believe he's come through the same sort of system as yourself. Looks to have a beautiful left foot. What can we expect from him going forward?
Yeah, I think he's another big talent that obviously people within the club are aware about. But maybe people from the outside don't know much about him. But I think you'll see much more of him in the weeks to come, and hopefully years to come as well.
Excellent. Jesse Well was a young man who's, you know, got some games behind him, but got plenty of years ahead of you in your career. We'll be watching with interest as you and your team at the Roar continue on this season, mate. So good luck. Thanks again for joining us. And, mate, we'll be watching you against Wellington this weekend and see if you can keep that momentum going.
Legends, thanks for having me.
No worries, Jesse Daly. All right, stick around on Box to Box. We're going to talk more A-League after the break.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Box to Box on Nine Radio, NTS News, Talk Sport. It's been a good first hour. Adam Lafondra, it's good to have him back. It sounded like he wanted to come back. So he got the best of the Super League over there in India. And Jesse Daly too, back from the States and doing some good things at the Roar. We're going to talk more A-League in a moment. Dino's in the studio. But before we do, it's a little over a week till Mother's Day. So get yourself sorted. Mums love us, we know that, no matter what. Like the time you cut your brother's hair on the school photo day. I think we did a few things that were a little bit more elaborate than that at the Gilbert household. I know the Edgeleys probably would have as well. No, mums don't like that stuff, but they cover up for us. But this Mother's Day, you're going to give mum a special fragrance at a special price from Chemist Warehouse. Michael, it's the place to go, isn't it?
It is the place to go. Plenty of great stuff to buy your mum at Chemist Warehouse. You don't need to go anywhere else. Just go there.
Exactly, including Versace Bright Crystal 90 mils for $69.99. Narciso Rodriguez for her 100 mils, just $89.99. Paco Rabanne Olympia 80 mils, $99.99. And Giorgio Armani C, which means, yes, of course, 100 mils. Willem, $149.99. Expect that you're going to go out to Chemist Warehouse and look after your beautiful mother, Cheryl, and buy something nice.
That is a bargain, Rob.
At Chemist Warehouse. It is. Great savings. They're every single day, gentlemen. Let's talk A-League.
The Dino's first. Here. Dino,
welcome.
Good to be back again. So Nice to be in the studio.
The first headline on the newspaper this week, I don't think you're going to enjoy it, Rob. Stadge's Mariners out of puff. Now, that is a question, not a statement. Let's discuss. They've won just one of their last eight. As we flagged a couple of weeks ago, Michael, they're working extremely hard for those draws, the 2-2 against Sydney, another example of that. Last Saturday, and they looked flat, completely out of gas against Brisbane Roar, and they had four put past them. That's the sort of performance they haven't turned in all season. They are sitting third at the moment. They've got 31 points. That's only six ahead of the Wanderers, who are in ninth with 25th. So there is a danger that they could be swallowed up by the entire chasing pack. Dean, are you concerned? They've had a thin squad and a young squad all year. They've managed to sort of keep the momentum going. Are you concerned? They need to win against a victory this Sunday at Amy Park.
I mean, look, their first part of the season, certainly the first half of the season, was excellent. And they were the surprise package for me in the league, you know, and I thought Stadge did a fabulous job. But, I mean, I watched the game against Brisbane, and I just thought Brisbane were sparkling compared to where they were. And they look like they are a little bit tired, a little bit deaf for
so you know, it's just the hallmarks of a young side.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because as the season goes on, it gets harder and harder. It's like, you know, you feel like you've got weights on your legs all the time. And for me, I think they've just got to try and hang in there and still just try and be as competitive as they can and just try and stay in the sixth for me, because they're lucky, really. They had a really good start.
And they are a young side, Michael, so they need all the experienced hands on decks. And that's why it was a real surprise to see Marcos Ureña with a really unnecessary red card against Brisbane Roar. He's been brilliant for them this season and quite a leader and seemed sort of quite a calm, sort of level-headed character. So to see that was a big surprise. What was going on there?
Yeah, I watched the game closely. I actually thought until that point Central Coast were, yeah, they were just hanging on, and they just needed to take advantage of some of the possession that they had, especially in their front third. They had quite a few chances. And then when he got sent off, they well and truly didn't cope with having 10 men. I thought he was a little unlucky. He was just late on a tackle, and it was one of those ones where he scraped down the shin of a player and originally got a yellow card, and then the VAR review instructed the referee to look at it, and he changed to a red. So he was a bit stiff.
It'll be fascinating to see them go up against the Victory this weekend.
Yeah, that's a big game, isn't it? Yeah. I think the problem
Victory's really, you know, I mean, that season turning point, you know, I referred to it as a potential dead cat bounce last week, not expecting it to happen, but it did against the Wanderers. And then, you know, they put in a real creditable performance in the Big Blue against Sydney midweek.
Yeah, they'll be better, weren't they? I think they structured up a little bit better. But what was interesting for me about Central Coast is, of the remaining games, I think five of the next six, seven are away, because they had a lot of those, because of the COVID draw, they had a lot of games early when other locations in Australia were sort of in mini lockdown. So I think Central Coast, it'll be a real travesty if they don't make the finals. But if they hit the skids, they could slip out of the top six as quicker than one of Tim Gilbert eating his hot dogs.
Okay, so that game is to be played at Amy Park. Now, Amy Park, another game that was played there throughout the week, made headlines for all the wrong reasons. Western United's home game against Newcastle drew just 993 people. Many reasons why, of course. They are, of course, a wandering club. Without a home, it was Monday night. The Jets are the bottom side, so not particularly big draw cards there. But it's still silent on the stadium. Maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, we had word from Chris Palavanis that they had the planning permit approved. Since then, silence once again. This is the whole reason why they got the license in the first place, was they were going to base themselves in the West. They were going to build their own stadium. They're now based in Melbourne CBD, and still silence on the stadium.
I think the club's struggling to articulate a narrative. We don't hear from the leaders of the club very often. I think there's a real question mark in the Melbourne football community about their place, where they fit. I'd like to see Steve Horvath and the chairman doing as much media as possible to articulate a vision and narrative for the club, because I think it's sadly missing. But
it's
the
so tough, isn't it, Edge, in this Melbourne market?
It is
market,
tough, but they need to do more.
Everything. I mean, even, you know, I've covered the NRL, the Melbourne Storm, for many, many years, and for all of the great success that they've had in the competition, they still get bumped into the back of the sports pages, and so football, you know, is a growing sport without the money that the NRL and the AFL have. You know, look, you know, the the feeling that I have is that, you know, we all wanted expansion. So, you know, I'm just hesitant to be too hard on them when we wanted expansion and we know the game doesn't have the kind of money that the other big competitions do. So, you know, I'm a little bit reluctant to go too hard at them.
But they have to fight for their spot. They have to fight for their fans. They're the third Johnny on the spot, aren't they? The third club in Melbourne. For me, they could be just doing a little bit more to articulate their narrative and vision. And 993 people at an A-League game is quite unacceptable.
Yeah, times are tough, but we just want a little bit more communication. Dean, I wanted to ask you about a feature of this season, which has been the midweek fixtures. Obviously, that's been out of necessity because of COVID-19, but I just wonder if there's a little bit of crowd fatigue now that the weather's sort of turned and a lot of people are back playing local sport. Michael mentioned in the news that it's nice for him to have a bit of dinner and sit there and watch the game, but when you want to draw people out to the game, I think now we're starting to see why, if possible, next season, they should just factor in games Friday to Sunday and maybe the odd midweek one. I think there's just an element of fan fatigue creeping into this season.
Well, you're quite right. Even like in our domestic competition here in the NPL, you know, their games are played predominantly from Friday to possibly like a Monday. Maybe that would be the window they would play in. So that's back, and that's been back now for about 8 or 10 weeks. Then the lower leagues have all just now started, so they're up into around round 5. So all of a sudden, I think the midweek game will get squashed in there, and I think it's going to struggle. So I think moving forward, I think if we go back to the weekends and have them on like double, triple headers, depending, you know, throughout the day, I think that's a better outcome.
And what that means, Dean, is a lot of those fans who are players are then training Tuesday, Thursday nights, which means they can't watch the midweek matches.
There's something else that you haven't sort of touched on, Will, and that is the fact that we're playing at the same time as the AFL and the NRL. So if you're in Melbourne or Sydney, let's not forget that football fans do have, a lot of them, AFL interest and NRL interest in Sydney. So they are mixing up their viewing and attendance. And I think it was a little naive by the leaders of our game to have rhetoric around the lines of, I think at the time, James Johnson, well, you know, we got to take him on at the, you know, our game is our game, it's better and we'll take him on. But I think we have to be nuanced about this and realise that summer, when we have that space for ourselves, is a much better way of pulling people to games in terms of attendance.
Couldn't agree more. The next point to expand on is Sydney not done with yet. We, of course, spoke to Adam Lafondra a little bit earlier on. His return shapes as a huge factor heading into the finals, Dino. They've had 3 wins and 3 draws from their last 6. We know that they haven't properly made up for his pressure and his goals, but they are up to 2nd. They're not smashing teams. They're doing just enough. They only beat the Victory by 1 goal, but you only need to score 1 goal and keep them out to get the 3 points. And they're very experienced come finals as well. They only need to get there. And in terms of who they might lose, they'll keep their Ollie Roos now. It'll probably only be Ryan Grant who heads to Q8 with the Socceroos. So I think they're looming as a big threat.
Massive threat, because I watched the game the other night and Costa Barbarous has missed 3 1-on-1s, and you put Alfie Lafondra in that team and he's not going to miss 3. All of a sudden a 1-0 victory against Melbourne becomes a 3 or 4-0 victory, and the change is very different. I think Costas Barbarousis has had a really ordinary season, and he was there to replace Lafondra, and he gets in opportunities to score and for some reason he just can't stick it away. So I think he's going to be the casualty of Alfie coming back.
Lafondra was excellent in his first spell. Did it in the best leagues in England as well. So, you know, he came with a really good pedigree. And even though, like, he's coming back, he won't be forgetting about where the ball's supposed to be, and he'll be breaking the net. So I think sooner he gets in, I think that will give Sydney a real big boost to maybe chase Melbourne City down.
And just another couple of news bites to leave you with. Robert Adama Traore is facing an independent disciplinary and ethics committee hearing on a Thursday night. If you look back at some of the precedents around the charge, which, you know, he struck the referee when he was sent off. Danny Vukovic, of course, got 9 months back in 2008. Probably more relevant is when Thiago Calvano got 8 weeks for Sydney FC in 2013. So Adama's season could well be over. That was pretty unnecessary when he hit Chris Beath. And finally, just breaking news, Daniel Georgevski's left Western Sydney and he's joined Melbourne City for the finals on a replacement injury deal for Nathaniel Atkinson. So expect to see Georgevski in the finals.
Well, Georgevski's just an exciting player when he's on his game, so interesting to see what he can add to City.
Interesting guy, funny guy too.
Yeah, exactly. Right, well done. Good open opening hour to the show, guys. We're going to pivot to Europe next. We're going to talk to Raphael Honigstein. We're going to wrap up that Super League story, and we'll talk more Europe and a bit of championship for Dino, especially because he's come back into the studio. Stick around in the next hour on Box to Box.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbus and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and
absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box Second Edition News, shortly with Willem van Dendere of The Athletic's Raphael Honigstein, one of the most authoritative voices on football in Europe. We're looking forward to chatting with Raphael about the fallout from the European Super League story last week. More on Europe on the Pitch with Dino, and we'll wrap it up with stoppage time. Talking championship, Willem. That will be a nice way to end the show as we get into the pointy end of the top flight and the second division in English football.
Looking forward to that, Rob. But before that, we've got Socceroos and Matildas Central for the Green and Gold Army. We've all watched so much sport, so much football on the television over the last year and a bit. But, Michael, we all know with international travel warming up, there's nothing that beats the in-stadium experience. And the first step to supporting the Socceroos, Matildas and Ollyroos in person is to sign up to the Green and Gold Army mailing list. To do so, head to ggatravel.com.au and be amongst the first to know about future overseas tours. Sam Kerr and Chelsea have it all to do in their Champions League semi-final against Bayern Munich, having gone down 2-1 away in the first leg. Kerr played the full match. She was a little bit quiet, and with the second leg this Sunday, it's on quite a friendly time for us on the Eastern Seaboard here of Australia, guys. 9:30 p.m. on Sunday is the second semi between Bayern Munich and Chelsea. Sam's also been nominated for the FA Women's Super League Player of the Year. You can jump on the website and vote for Sam there. Great news at Arsenal, where Steph Catley was on the bench for the first time since December as she returns from injury. While at Bristol, Ella Mastrantonio's late equaliser gave them a point as they look to stave off relegation. Elsewhere, Ivy Lewitt continues to string consistent minutes together for Sevilla in Spain. Amy Harrison came off the bench for PSV as they won their first final against Ajax. And Betty Goad played a full match for FC Meppen as they also look to stay in the top German division. And Michael, it's been reported by Anthony Colangelo in The Age that Lisa Devanna has been included in a three-day Matildas training squad to be held next week. Wouldn't that be a story?
That is a story, and she deserves that inclusion. And there'll be an announcement, I imagine, in the next couple of days, and there'll be a couple of other sneaky players that'll get selected in that as well, which I know about and I can't say, otherwise people will kill me.
That's very strong.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Fascinated. That's the look on your face lines there, suggests, we're reading between the lines, and anyone who listens to this show often enough will perhaps read between them themselves.
Moving on to the gents, 20-year-old Ollyroo hopeful Zach Duncan has made his return for AGF Aarhus in Denmark, having recovered from the ACL injury he sustained last May. Now, if you remember, that was just a month before the Tokyo Olympics were meant to be, so that was a heartbreaking injury, but with a delayed start, or a full year delay, he's now got a reprieve, so expect him to maybe be called into the Ollyroo's camp next month. In Croatia, Deni Juric has scored and assisted another for Croatian top flight side Šibenik in their win over Slaven Koprivnica. They remain mid-table, and he has 11 goals, the fifth most for the league. And to Asia to finish off, Aaron Moy and Shanghai Port, formerly SIPG, kicked off the Chinese Super League season with a 6-1 win. And finally, a bit of a forgotten man of Australian football, Aurelio Vidmar. He's going to leave the Singaporean side, of which he was their inaugural coach, the Lion City Sailors, and return to Thai side BG Patum United, who he managed when they were known as Bangkok Glass.
Never forget Aurelio, though. Him and Tony combining in those, particularly those matches against Argentina. There were some glorious moments. Aurelio with the long hair and Tony with the short. They were a fixture in the Socceroos outfit for a long time there. And we just watch his
Trivial Pursuit question for you women. Willem, sorry.
Women.
I shouldn't call you women. Trivial Pursuit question for Willem. Which Vidmar brother called Adelaide a pissant town?
That would have been Aurelio.
That would have been Aurelio. Called his hometown a pissant town. How's that?
Champions League news. Manchester City have fought back from a half-time deficit to defeat PSG 2-1 in their Champions League semi-final first leg. Marquinhos opened the scoring for the home side after 15 minutes, but a pair of free kicks, one accidental, one intentional, put City on the cusp of their first Champions League final. In the other semi-final, Chelsea were taken away goal into their home leg against Real Madrid, having drawn 1-1 at the Alfredo Di Stefano. I'll have a full Champions League wrap with Dino a little bit later on, but for now, Rob, it looks like an all-English final could be on the cards once again.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, Manchester City fought back brilliantly against PSG. It was a real tale of two halves, that match for sure. And, you know, Pep Guardiola, you can never expect that he doesn't have something up his sleeve. And, you know, Maurizio Pochettino, you've got to feel sorry for him coming, you know, out of the wilderness for nearly a couple of seasons there, and he gets a hold of PSG with Neymar and Kylian Mbappe. If they go out, there'll be hell to pay in Paris.
Bayern Munich have announced Julian Nagelsmann as their new manager on a 5-year deal starting from July, with The Athletic reporting they've paid RB Leipzig €20 million for his signature. 33-year-old Nagelsmann joined Leipzig from Hoffenheim just 2 seasons ago and will now replace Hansi Flick, who looks odds-on to replace Jogi Löw as German national team boss. Should Bayern win their 9th successive Bundesliga as expected, it will be Flick's 7th title in 2 years. So he leaves the club on good terms, but what a story it is. A 33-year-old will be in charge of possibly the world's biggest club.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's we look at Ryan Moore at Tottenham Hotspur stepping up when Jose Mourinho was given the marching orders. It seems to be the trend in football that younger, exciting coaches are coming in with new and fresh ideas. So, you know, Nagelsmann's done incredibly well at RB Leipzig, and there's no doubt that, you know, with the firepower at Bayern, that his career is one that has got many years to come. So, perfect segue there, Willem, because we're going to wrap it up, and after the break, we're going to talk to the Athletic's Raphael Honigstein, who is an authority on not only the Bundesliga, but all things going on in Europe. We're going to find out a little bit more on the fallout from the European Super League story last weekend, and we'll have a yarn about the signing of Nagelsmann as well. Stick around. That's all next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most...
Yes, this is Box to Box on Nine Radio, NTS News, Talk Sport. Now, like the rest of the sporting world, the football world, of course, was fascinated by this, but the European Super League just, well, it didn't come out of nowhere. We'd been watching it for a while, the Project Big Picture. We'd spoken to Henry Winter about it as well, and it seemed to fade off, but when it emerged, boy, did it come on like a firecracker. But then it blew up just as quickly, and a man that I know I was listening to quite a bit of in analysis, both in terms of radio from BBC Sport and reading his copy on The Athletic, is Raphael Honigstein, and we welcome him back to the show. Raphael, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
It was quite an incredible story, the way that that it emerged and blew up. It was leaked. Martin Ziegler, of course, had the story in the Times, but it blew up and went away so quickly. The way that the Athletic reported on it was quite incredible. Some of the summaries, you know, has there ever been a more baffling, crude, duplicitous, political, scheming, unsatisfactory, cynical, divisive week in the history of sport? I asked that question to you. It was amazing stuff.
It was, and duplicitous, I think, is the word here, because UEFA, the ECA, a lot of people within other clubs had been working with these guys for 3 years on a Champions League reform. And there were tough negotiations and compromises. And up until, I think, Thursday and Friday, before the announcement of the Super League on Sunday, these guys were saying, yeah, this is great. You know, we finally have a beautiful solution, in the words of Andrea Agnelli. And they were all ready to sign this off on Monday. And then about 8-9 hours before, they all withdraw and say they've founded a Super League. So it couldn't have been more dramatic. It couldn't have been more, you know, adventurous, if you want to put a slight more positive spin on it. But of course, these guys ran up into so much resistance, and I think their power base was nearly as strong that they thought, and certainly not strong enough to pull this through, because what I think they didn't fully appreciate was that this wasn't just an idea to have a different competition. The fallout from this would have led to the destruction of the current football ecosystem. Mm. And even fans of the clubs involved, who perhaps might have looked at the idea of a Super League with mixed feelings initially, realized very, very quickly that this would lead to the end to football as we know it, and that's why you saw such a massive backlash on all levels.
And the naive beyond parody line in that same article from the Athletic, I think it largely refers to the Americans, you know, whether it's Henry, Glazer, Kroenke. These are men who are heavily involved in closed shop competitions, and you know, this idea that there was uncertainty around their ability to participate in a competition that had $3 to $4 billion every year was just unacceptable to them. So they thought they could make a decision around business and then just get on with it and get JP Morgan on side. And then you had Chelsea and City pressured into to joining. It just is bizarre that people with that level of power and clout in the mainstream business world were, as the article does say, as naive as they were.
Yes, I think that is the most interesting part of the story. You can understand why in Spain and Italy, the Europa League was seen as a way to rescue what is a broken system for them. And their leagues cannot sustain the clubs. They are hugely in trouble financially. And the promise of €300 million up front plus similar sums guaranteed every single year was such that people thought, okay, we have to do it. There's just no other way. For the English clubs, I think it was always a non-starter because they should have realized, even if you want to take away all the moral considerations and everything I just said about, you know, the wider football ecosystem, if you form a breakaway league with six English teams who always qualify, then what is the point of the Premier League? At that point, you know, they should have really sat back and think, why is the Premier League so successful? Is it successful because there just happen to be big clubs in there? Or is it successful because it is big clubs plus competitiveness and real jeopardy? Because you can miss out on the top four. You can certainly not win the title if you're Man United for the best part of 10 years. If you take away all that excitement from the Premier League, what is left? And I think it's only when the Premier League started making calls and telling them, listen, what you guys are trying to do is basically to destroy the Premier League as we know it and have it, then I think the penny dropped. But as you said, it should have really been the first consideration, you know, what does that mean for our existing business, the Premier League business? Is this viable? And the answer should have been no straight away.
Exactly. This is Box to Box. We're talking to the Athletic's Raphael Honigstein and the wash up of the European Super League story.
Raphael, I'm intrigued to know your analysis of how Dortmund and Bayern were able to, how deeply involved they were in all of the pre-meetings and the preparations for the announcement of Super League. And then obviously they decided to not be a part of the official announcement. So just for Australian listeners, can you give us shed some insight on those two clubs in particular and how their fans have reacted to the Super League and their involvement, whatever that was.
Yeah, so Bayern Munich in the past were part of a Super League setup in theory. They were looking at it. They were trying to evaluate what it means. One of the Bayern officials looked at the possibility to exit the Bundesliga if necessary. Was that legally possible? This was all back in 2016. They realized for many reasons that it wasn't a good idea. They also realized, I think, which until now was sort of the balance of mutual deterrence, that having a Super League as a threat is more useful than Super League as a reality. You can pressurize your UEFA into making changes without necessarily ever pushing the button, because once you push the button, things become very problematic, as we indeed have seen. This time around, they weren't involved because it was kept on a need-to-know basis. I think there was an understanding on behalf of the conspirators that both Bayern and Dortmund would not be in a position to join immediately, if at all. They would have to have extensive consultations with their members and push this through domestically. They were both mentioned as clubs that should be invited as reasonably as quickly as possible, but they were not directly invited before because I think Florentino Perez and everyone realized that losing momentum, if you invite two clubs who then start you know, thinking, can we do it? Can we not do it? This is going to leak, is not going to help this. The only way in their minds to push this through is to have a big bang with 12 clubs saying we're in it, and not two or three more teams are saying we might join, who knows, whatever, we'll have to talk. So they weren't asked, and I think they were happy that they weren't directly asked. They were to a certain extent surprised that this was done, even though they were were very aware of the wider discussions about the Super League, which had been going on for many years. They didn't think this was going to happen now because they had assurances, like everybody else involved in the process, that the clubs involved were really happy with the new compromise that was about to be decided on that Monday. So even they didn't really know that the 12 clubs were this desperate, stroke determined to push this through.
That's fascinating insight. And what about in Paris? Paris Saint-Germain, they obviously, the Qatari owners, they elected to stay out. Some people have speculated it's because of their closeness to FIFA and the official environment and structure of the game. Other people say that they were sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what happened. What's your view of how PSG viewed the Super League?
Well, I think there are a couple of considerations. First of all, they don't have the financial need for a Super League. You know, yes, it's exciting to play in a Super League, and I'm sure for the Qatari owners, you know, to have even more glamour and visibility attached to their team in principle is attractive, but not at the cost of destroying French football. I think they realized very quickly that this would just destroy Ligue 1 even further. Plus, it would destroy their relationship with UEFA, which is a good one. FIFA to a certain extent as well. And it just didn't see the attraction. Now, what's interesting is in the contract that was drawn up between the 12 clubs involved, it said that PSG should also be invited and they should decide within 14 days. Dortmund and Bayern should decide within 30 days. I think that discrepancy is an acceptance that for Bayern and Dortmund, this would have been much, much harder because of their domestic issues and the structural problems of doing that in the Bundesliga than for PSG. For PSG, it could have been done, but they were very clear that they wouldn't do it. Some people have speculated that it's because there's some Saudi Arabian money behind the Super League. We haven't really seen any evidence to substantiate it. This is a line that's being pushed by certain people within the industry. And that, of course, would readily explain why the Qataris would not be anywhere near it. But I have to stress again that as much as it is very juicy and exciting, a theory, there is not really any hard evidence behind it. So I think it was more done for geopolitical reasons, if you will. They realized this was not going to play well for them and they didn't see the financial need. So with both these boxes being unticked for them, there just wasn't a pressing case.
Yeah, fascinating stuff, and really great to hear your analysis of this. Before we let you go, big changes to the game of musical chairs is well in play in the Bundesliga. Hansi Flick is going to take the hot seat by all accounts of Yogi Löw at Die Mannschaft. Julian Nagelsmann takes his place, and breaking news at RB Leipzig as well, all interlinking stories.
I don't think we've ever seen a Bundesliga season where so many clubs have changed managers and have tried to recruit from within the Bundesliga, which then, of course, has created this domino effect with more and more clubs looking for more and more managers. Jesse Marsch, having been at RB Salzburg, was always going to be high up the list to succeed Julian Nagelsmann. I think it's come a little bit quicker because of Bayern, the situation at Bayern with Hansi Flick leaving 1.5 years into his deal at Bayern. Now, that opened up the opportunity for Nagelsmann to come in. It's been a dream for him, and that in turn produced pressure on RB Leipzig to perhaps fast-track their promotion of Jesse Marsch a little bit earlier than they initially had anticipated. There's still a few clubs that haven't decided on a new manager. Frankfurt is one of them. There's speculation that they might pick Oliver Glasner from Wolfsburg, which would then leave Wolfsburg with another manager to pick. So, as you said, musical chairs, all very, very entertaining. Mm-hmm. But I hope it's just a one-off because, you know, the amount of change and upheaval, I don't think it's healthy for the league if that continues now the next few years going forward. I really hope that we've, for some reason, ended up in this place where everyone is desperate to change, but it's not really the best way to run your club with all the knock-on effects of, you know, having to change the squad to a certain extent, having to change the backroom staff, etc. It's a one-off,
yeah. I hope. Hopefully for the Bundesliga, but the spectre of Hansi Flick returning the German national side to its normal place or at the top of the football ladder is not one that is welcomed by most of the rest of the football world, Raphael, because we all know when Germany's up and about, they just win things, and that means other people lose, doesn't it? So thanks again for joining us, Raph. We love your stuff. We love your copy. We love your comments, and we also love the fact that you joined us on this show this week. All the best, mate.
Thank you. Cheers.
Raphael Honigstein on Box to Box from The Athletic. Very, very generous to our show, as they always are. All right, stick around with Dino after the break. We're going to talk more Europe on the show.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal.
Yes, this is Box to Box on Nine Radio, NTS News Talk Sport. Fascinating chat with Raph. I want to ask Edge a couple of thoughts on the Super League to wrap up that story. But before we do, is your home running out of space? Well, I know many of you have called Storage King because I hear from Storage King telling me how many of you have done that. So if you're decluttering, moving, renovating, downsizing, or creating a home office, Storage King has the answer. Will Manchester City need to remove some of their silverware from the cabinet to put the Champions League trophy? They'll need to put the Premier League trophy in there. They'll need to call Storage King because they've got stores everywhere. There's a location just around the corner, even in Manchester City. No, I don't think there is, but I'm just saying that. They've got professionals who can organise it all for you. They're the kings of storage, moving, and more. Go to storageking.com.au and let Storage King, Michael, Willem, Dino and Damien give you back some space.
Yes, plenty of space at Storage King there for is. All the important trophies that Manchester City have. They might just have a little vault over here in Australia and send it over for something for the Melbourne City administration to look after. Yep. Premier League trophy, Champions League trophy.
Go on to Michael, Raphael, as you can tell, there might be other people who know as much about the arcane and inner workings of football, but no one more than Raphael Honigstein. He really is an authority on the subject. But you know, you've worked closely in the business of football for many years, and you know, you're connected to, you know, the top flight, the top brass in Australia is a better way to describe it, to FIFA through your international tours and so on. So you know, what's your take on how this is all wrapped up, and are there some burning embers there that just need to be flamed by the likes of Florentino Perez and Agnelli from Juventus to start this whole bonfire again?
Well, I think it's inevitable that change in the football landscape's coming. With the Super League stuff, I think there was three pots of... I think you've got to... What was the items that united these clubs to try this? Why did, you know, because they all have very different objectives.
They're collectively 7.4 billion euro that's in right. debt was the main one.
Well, that's possible. But from the point of view of, I think there's three pots of teams. There's the American teams, Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal and Tottenham. You know, they want salary caps. They want financial regulation. They want cost controls. Mm. They want stable and predictable revenue. And their objective is to make money. Mm. Okay. So that's what they want. Then I think you've got Manchester City and Chelsea, who want no regulation, they want a free market. Mm. They want to use their extreme mega wealth to give them a competitive advantage.
But it's about prestige for them, isn't it?
It's about political legitimacy for the United Arab Emirates, but
what I mean by that is prestige. City
and, yeah, it is, but it's political legitimacy and prestige. And then the Spanish and Italian teams, I mean, they want a level playing field. You know, the Premier League has driven salaries up. They've got mountains of debt that leave their place in future competitions in jeopardy. So for them, it was about the money. So all of those unique items sort of brought this unholy alliance together. But I'll tell you why I think change in football's coming, and that is that Infantino, he's on the record of saying, he said that we need to be open to everyone, we need to be open to everything, to every proposal, to every idea. He's also said that he wants a Club World Cup to be 24 teams. His direct quote is, "For me, it's not about Bayern Munich against Liverpool. It's about Bayern Munich against Boca Juniors." Mm. That's his quote that drives the expansion of the Club World Cup. Arsene Wenger, who's now FIFA's Chief of Global Football Development, he's actually made an official recommendation that the World Cup should be held every 2 years rather than the current four-year cycle. And Infantino has also spoken of an African Super League of 20 top teams, and he's also thrown his support behind the USA's MLS discussions with Mexico's Liga MX with a merged competition of three divisions across Mexico and the United States. So I actually think there's a lot of change coming in the FIFA and the Confederation worlds. It's just that the Super League clubs, they'll
tried
have
to hijack it.
Yeah, they tried to hijack it. And for all the reasons we've discussed over the last 2 weeks, it was a shocker.
Yeah, well, it'll be fascinating to watch what you've described.
That's my summary.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, I think the people who look at the bigger picture of football would largely agree that that this is inevitably going to happen as the global village becomes smaller and more accessible, hopefully in a post-COVID world we're all inoculated, because if that's not going to happen anytime soon, then no one's going to play each other outside of their own countries anyway. Before we go down that rabbit hole any further, let's talk about actual football on the pitch. Dino, we had a couple of very different Champions League semi-finals played. First of all, there was the Chelsea-Real Madrid result. Chelsea really, I think that Thomas Tuchel would be disappointed to have left with a 1-1 result there. They had that game in control, and if it wasn't for Benzema, who changed the momentum entirely off his own boot, that they could have been going back to Stamford Bridge with two or three away goals in their back pocket.
Yeah, look, without a doubt, I thought Chelsea's start, especially in the first 20-25 minutes, it was just domination. And it looked like men against boys, to be fair. Mm. And they had the opportunities. But unfortunately, then, from some poor finishing, also some good goalkeeping. But basically, Pulisic got them the lead, and
lovely taken goal.
And
he stepped up under Tuchel, hasn't he?
And he has. And I think Tuchel, if we just talk just quickly before we move on, is that I think he's had a big, big impression in that dressing room. And I think it goes deep, apart from the people like Tammy Abrahams, who's not in the squad. Well, he's in the squad, but not coming on. But the starting 11, 12, 13, 14, regularly playing, they're absolutely playing brilliant for them. But the one thing, as you said, Benzema was a big, big plus for them. He was awkward all night, and he was the only, for me, only threat that Chelsea had to worry about. And unfortunately, they couldn't stop him with that. And it was a superb volley. And and it's 1-1, and it's putting it in a really, really good position. But I still fancy, if Chelsea start like they did in Spain, I think Chelsea will go through.
Okay, and that's next week, as is the second leg of the PSG Manchester City match. We talked earlier on in the show, Maurizio Pochettino, he can't take a trip.
It's not easy.
I mean, you would think that pretty much any manager in the world would have walked into that lineup and just been licking their chops, thinking we're heading to the Champions League. We've lost last year, and we're going to win it this year. But he obviously has reckoned on Pep Guardiola and the small thing of Manchester City standing in their way. So it was all going pretty well for them for a while there, wasn't it? They had the game under control until De Bruyne equalised in the second half, then the red card. And it all went to, well, the only way to describe it, Dino, after that is it went to shit for PSG.
It did. Well, I mean, Poch had been there before, obviously, from his Tottenham days, and obviously then he's been out of work for a long time trying to find the right job. Yeah. And I think for the way PSG played in the first half, you could say that he'd had a really positive, you know, reinforcement of his managerial experience, that they were right in the game, and they were I thought they most probably edged Manchester City in the first half. But when you look then, with Pep makes a couple of changes, the changing of the fullbacks, that was a masterstroke, because from there on it became really the and if you look at the De Bruyne, I mean, what a player that boy is. Yeah. And for me, I think with a two goal away, I mean, again, PSG can score goals, But if you look at the...
But not against Pep. Pep's not going to allow exactly his own fortress
Not at Manchester, no, I agree. And I think it could be definitely a Manchester...
But it'll be entertaining because they're going to leave nothing on the table. They're not going to go there and not attempt to nick it. So I reckon strap yourself in for that.
I do want to mention one thing, though. I know we talk about the world stars, but... Who do you think I'm going to talk about?
Benzema.
Neymar. Oh, yeah. Now, I didn't even have to look. And it just, for me, he's such a talent. Mm. But going down like he does and rolling around, he's just got to get it. You look at Mbappe, totally different character. Yeah. Just bounces back up, you know. Mm. And for me, if he's going to have, if we're going to give him that, you know, like one of the best players ever in the world, he'll always be remembered for some of his antics because I think it's poor.
He will.
He's definitely not in the. He's not in the top group of players. Messi, Pelé.
But he could be if he didn't do that. I mean, it just spores his image, I think.
Yeah. Hey, before we move briefly onto the Premier League, wasn't it great to see fans back at Wembley last week?
It was.
But you knew that after he got sacked that Jose was he couldn't lose, because if they go out and win, he would have said, I orchestrated this and I will take my fair share of credit. But if they lose, which they did, he'll then say, well, you lost because you sacked me. But they just seem to be far too defensive for me.
Well, and, it was a poor game.
You know, a 29-year-old coach is, although he's got Spurs blood running through and through, he just wasn't up to the wire.
What he was good at is post-match after. I mean, he's honest.
A little bit too late for that, dude.
I know, but it is what it is. And he's coming up against, you know, someone who's got a masterstroke every time you step on a football field. So, I mean, I thought it's interesting. Like in regards to even going into this week's games, if you look at just some of the games last week, and there's been like there was the Aston Villa West Brom 2-2, and you know there was drama there, and we also are quite surprisingly 4-0 win with Burnley at Wolves, and I'm thinking, do you think that the manager at Wolves now might be looking to be? To move on?
Yeah, well, look, I think the thing, Nuno Espirito Santo has been there from the days of the championship, and, you know, I did go there in 2018, and I think you maybe were having a little bit of a jab with me, suggesting that I was having expertise. I had a Bondi chicken pie and a Bovril at your recommendation, but Espirito Santo...
He's still recovering.
He turned that team into... a genuine Premier League side, didn't he? Yeah. And they've been, a competitive side. No one ever takes Wolves for granted these days, do they? So, you know, it would be a massive thing for him to leave after taking them up after all those years and having so many Portuguese players involved, because it would be just an entire cultural shift at the club if it did happen. So I hope it doesn't. Dino, moving on to this week though, before we do, it is a busy week. There's still, we're going to talk championship afterwards, but there's still, you know, a little bit of flexing to go at the top end of the competition with only four match days remaining. And of course, the teams that are going to drop all but look, certain, but what's your assessment of how it's going to go? We know that it's a bit hard to think that Fulham can survive here. We know West Brom and Sheffield United, well, West Brom mathematically could stay up, but it's just that Big Sam looks like it's not going to happen.
No, look, I think it's clear now, unless there's a miracle, and Fulham have been battling really well, but for me, Fulham, West Brom and Sheffield are down in my eyes.
Okay, and up the top end, so it's just so competitive. I mean, West Ham have got it on their own boot to lose now, don't they? But they've got the points difference in their favour. If they keep on winning,
goal difference is
not as good. It's not as good as Liverpool and Spurs, but Spurs are still in there in the discussion because there's only 2 points separating them. So and Leicester look like they're pretty comfortable. Chelsea, not as much, but you'd think that they're going to.
Well, I think if we look at this week's games, the key games that most probably jump out are. The one on the Sunday with Manchester United against Liverpool, always a big game for both clubs, and I think Manchester United will be runners up. I don't think they're going to catch Man City. So, but it's so much important for Liverpool to get those 3 points and put pressure on those teams like Leicester, like Chelsea, West Ham, and even Tottenham below them, and even Everton. So, I mean, I think even Everton, with that win last week, they're on 52 points, and they've got the game in hand. They go to 55. So they'll actually go to sixth place. So they're knocking on door for Europe as well. So I think the run home is fabulous. What other games are you looking at? I mean, Edge, what game are you thinking? That I think Newcastle Arsenal, being an Arsenal fan, with you, Edge, I think this is one where Newcastle are safe, but if they're going to make it 100%, they have to win this. And then Arsenal, yeah. I think Arsenal are just trying to push themselves up the league.
Yeah, Arsenal's just trying to get through to the end of the season unscathed. But for me, it's Manchester United, Liverpool, huge game. Manchester United are in a rocking spate of form at the moment. So if Liverpool lose, Rob, it'll be hard for them to. Hard for them to get back, especially because West Ham, as you say,
I think that draw against Leeds really their chance. But look, it could happen. But you'd think that it's just a little bridge too far. They might get within 2 points, but I don't think they're going to win it.
But the Hammers, they've got to go to Burnley, and we know what Burnley's like.
All right, okay, boys, well done. Let's great wrap that up there, because as our mate Derek often says, you don't want to be on a turf moor on a cold Monday night for any reason.
Jeez, they were stiff not to be in the Super League, Burnley.
All right, well, Dino, Championship, we're going to talk your favourite subject next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on Nine Radio NTS News Talk Sport. We're bringing it home with the fourth official giving us about 8 minutes to wrap it up. And, you know, lately we haven't been spending enough time talking about the championship because Dino hasn't been in the studio. We're still the Box to Box Wanderers as we move from home to home. But he has been back in the last couple of weeks and he's been champing at the bit to talk about the championship, especially given that under Wayne Rooney, Derby County look like they might just sneak out of this as one of the clubs fighting to avoid relegation.
Look, to be fair, they are in a world of pain, and to be honest with you, it's been in free fall now for about 3 or 4 weeks. Mm. I mean, they had a little spell just a month ago, and where they got some points, and realistically, it's a four horse race. I mean, it's not really in the sense where Wickham, for me, that they're not going to get there, even if they win their two games. But what Wickham can do is they can certainly spoil parties, you know, for different people. As
and don't clubs through. That are about to go
well,
to the
they
drop
do.
Love that.
Well, they've just got nothing to play for now. Mm. So now they want to say, well, I want to get my make
just
sure
kick
I'm,
you in the
get shoes. My contract, your yeah. contract for next year. So as it stands at the bottom now, right, you've got Derby who are just one place above on 40 play. They've got 21 minus goal difference, but 43 points. You've got Rotherham on 39 with a minus 16, so they have a much better...
And a game in hand.
Plus a game in hand, yeah. Then you've got Sheffield Wednesday, who's still alive, because they're on 39, but they've got 21 goal difference. So then if you look at the games that we've got coming up, so this Saturday, we've got Sheffield Wednesday playing Nottingham Forest. Now, could Nottingham Forest... with the real appetite to see Derby down, we go, well, we'll put the...
Have you been getting any messages?
Well, we have. John Beckett's vegan. I think the queue's gone in the rack.
Right, haven't him a shout-out for a while, Dino's.
Well, exactly right. So that could easily happen, and then all of a sudden Sheffield come alive, and if Derby don't get their result, which is a really difficult one against Swansea. Mm-hmm. However, Swansea are only playing for places in the top six. It won't change. The top six are done. Mm-hmm. So maybe Swansea might just go, well, we might rest a few before the playoffs. Don't know. Mm-hmm. Okay, but then it goes back to Rotherham. They've got their last home game on Saturday against Blackburn.
When I was doing my reading on Adam Lafondre, he started his career at Rotherham.
Yeah, he did. So there you go. And they're playing Blackburn.
Interesting.
And they back up against Luton away on Tuesday.
This is an insight into the mind of a football fan who is desperate for his side not to drop, who's done all the analysis, all the workings out, and he's thinking, it's going to happen. We're going to survive.
Don't forget if they just survive, because
Sheffield Wednesday would, if they hadn't had the points deduction, would be 4 points.
Yeah, they would.
Derby would be in the drop zone. So
that is exactly right. And realistically, when you come back to the last day,
so they're crap anyway, Rob.
Rotherham go to Cardiff. Derby have got Sheffield Wednesday, so that's the game you're thinking. Well, that's the 3 points because I don't think we're going to get any points against Swansea. But that's maybe where the game is.
So if you were sitting in the lounge room of your great mate John Beckett having a cup of hot tea on a cold spring afternoon in Nottingham, what would he be saying to you right now?
We'd just be rubbing it in.
It wouldn't be a cup of tea.
It wouldn't be a cup of tea either. No.
Okay, the top end. So you mentioned the top six are locked in because, between Barnsley on six, they're on 77 points, as are Swansea and Bournemouth. So Reading are 69. So that's all.
I think the playoffs are going to be quite exciting
So
as
we
well.
Think that. So Norwich are up. Watford are up.
Yep.
So the question is, who of Brentford, Bournemouth, Swansea and Barnsley? So, yeah, those final games, which we all love.
They're in the
I've got a big fan of the Hornets on another chat who made it very clear to a bunch of us that they're up. I know I've already stated that I'd love to see Brentford, Bournemouth again, another team that have been recently, as Swansea have been in the Premier League. But my preferences are either Brentford or Barnsley to go up. I'd love to see those two clubs, and we'll do a little bit.
Well, Thomas Frank, the Brentford manager, for me, is a cracker. He's different. He's out there. He's got the weirdest hair.
First season at the new club. And he's a rock and roll.
And he's brilliant to watch. Like you could forget what's happening on the pitch. Have a look at him. He's on the sideline. But they're a good side.
Remember, Dino, they looked gone for all money at the start of the season as well. They would have been so disappointed to miss out last season than they started this season. Into the new stadium, things were a little bit uncomfortable for them. They lost Ollie Watkins as well.
Yeah, they did.
And we were sitting here going, oh, no, the dream might be over for Brentford. So the fact that they're sitting third and they beat Bournemouth in a highly competitive game just the last week gone shows how well they have done.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, they would be at my favourites going into the playoffs.
So what's your prediction then, Dino? If you had to pluck one of them based on your reading in the situation, you watch a lot of championship football.
Yeah, look, it depends on the draw as well. If you just look at the teams, it's 81 points with Brentford, and then there's the three of them are on 77, and it's only really then goal difference.
But isn't it because they're guaranteed to finish third through sixth? I mean, it's a matter of keeping up their form, isn't it? Because they're going to play in the playoffs, and they know that they're not going to knock.
But they might favour certain opposition to give themselves to get to the final, and they're most probably that's what they're looking at now because there's nothing else to do. They're not going to jump. Well, they might. They won't. They won't jump into the top two, so it won't happen. So for me, I think they'll just be making sure they're competitive. They're sharp and ready for the playoffs, and hopefully get themselves in a position where they're in control. And that's supposed to probably be in third against six.
Right. Well, there's only a month or so to go of the regular season in Europe before we move to the Euros. I guess we take it for granted now that it is actually going to happen. I mean, there was a period of time where we weren't sure, but it looks like UEFA have made the decisions now about the stadium changes, where England is going to benefit from some of the matches that have been relocated. So for those of you who are listening the anticipation of that great tournament that was postponed from last year,
Euros are a cracking. Yeah. It's a cracking tournament.
It is 100%. So we're going to be starting to prepare in the next few weeks and previewing. And we'll be talking to all the big names around the world and covering all the matches for you.
We should get the Prime Minister of Ireland on to talk about what he
I was thinking of
Michael Martin. He said that UEFA was out of order for demanding that stadia be filled to the minimum of 25% capacity for Euro championships, and as a result of that, UEFA said we might be out of order, but we're going to take those four games. We're going to give two to Wembley in London and St Petersburg, the fantastic Zenit. St Petersburg Stadium gets a further two games because obviously they were going to get games.
Yeah, we'll get Michael Martin on and then Alexander Seferin for the reply next week.
Exactly. All the big games on Box.
And all I can say is Daniel Ek from the Spotify co-founder, Arsenal fans get behind him because he wants to buy Arsenal and we can get the club out of the United States of America ownership hands.
Okay, all right. Well done, boys.
Thank you. Yep, lovely.
Well done.
Thank you very much, gents.
Michael.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to spend this time with you, Rob. And, of course, Willem and Dean. And Damo.
And sadly for us, our friend Derek, he's probably, you know, coughing and spluttering as he's recovering from his...
You're on oxygen yet?
No, he's not. He's okay. He hasn't got COVID. He's just got a bad bronchial infection, and he'll be back next week for us. He will have missed the opportunity to talk to Raphael Honigstein because he is a fanboy. But we wish you all the best, Derek, and hope you get better real soon.
Is it Gunner? He'll get better.
Mate, that's not an endorsement that I would expect would encourage anyone to think that somebody would get better quickly because, you know,
an Arsenal supporter. Yeah,
exactly. All right, I've got to wrap it up here. Losing my way. Damo, thank you. All right, join us next week. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us this week, first of all, but join us next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Boys and girls.
Don't leave them out, please.
No, I won't. When we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.
Well done, boys.